talk a little bit about something else, referenced a couple of times in the book. Not something else, somebody else. What significance does Malcolm Lowry have for
him? You know, in a lot of ways, very peripheral. I've never been a real big reader of Malcolm Lowry. Once Burrard Inlet, as a site here in Vancouver, becomes part of the locus you're thinking about and thinking through. And when I'm up on Burnaby Mountain, you're looking right down into Burrard Inlet, and you're looking across at where the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation have their village still, and some of their reservation. But right there, exactly where the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation is where Malcolm Lowry had his shack squatted there.
Dollarton,
exactly. Yeah. That's part of the Tsleil-Waututh land is where he was. So he's sort of, you're just sort of aware. It's like looking down and seeing a particular bay or harbor and going, oh, that's such and such. You look down there and you go, oh, that's Malcolm Lowry. It's still in kind of part of the consciousness. For a long time, there was a literary festival there every summer called Under the Volcano. So I've read down there as part of Under the Volcano. So it's just part of your consciousness of the space that Malcolm Lowry is here, that writing happened here. So he was just sort of there. I wasn't thinking hard about him, but it really clicked when I went to Grasmere in the UK. And I discovered this quotation, and not there, but like somewhere in the process of traveling and thinking about that trip, I discovered this quotation from Lowry, because he stayed in Grasmere for a little while, and he said, after he'd been here in Vancouver, and he said that he loved it so much, not because of, you know, Wordsworth or romanticism or poetry. He says, it's because it reminds me of Burrard Inlet. And suddenly there was this link between Wordsworth, Lake District, and a particular view of nature and nature's place in poetry. And Lowry in this location here. So he's really like just like a little thread that I picked up and said, oh, I can weave these two things together. And he's just one way of connecting them.
And it's ironic because it's a British man, yes, and going to the UK and thinking about Canada, which is the opposite of
exactly
what you would expect.
Yeah, but boy, a long tradition, and especially in this century, of European tourists coming to North America and going, oh my God, love it here. You know, German, still, it's still a cliche of German people coming here and just wanting to hike up and down mountains day and night.
Right after you mention him for the first time, there's on 31, the next page, there's a sort of etymology of Kinder Morgan. That's kind of interesting. Yeah. Oh, and one other question about the Malcolm Lowry. And,
sure.
There's a picture, two pictures side by side.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's illustrating what you're just talking about.
Exactly. The photograph looking down on the inlet and the photograph looking down on Grasmere.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So back to 31.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
Did you want me to read that one?
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. Walking the route of the pipeline through suburban Burnaby, we observe streams filled with spring runoff and yellow high-pressure pipeline warning signs standing midstream yellow reflectors cautioning raccoons. The view down Shelmont, past the tank farm towards Burnaby Lake. Suburban street march strangeness through, though only one passing driver gave us the finger. Kinder Morgan's Trans Mountain Pipeline carries product for Shell and other companies from Alberta to the coast. Kinder Morgan might be translated from approximate German as tomorrow's children. Et in blockadia ego. Sous l'épave, la plage. It was always what was under the poetry that mattered. Who said I said this wasn't a court, it was a forest? They wanted to drill a pipeline through mountain, replacing a pipeline near mountain. We said no, now who knows what will result. We had our own blueprints, had to scramble to avoid traffic at Duthie and Hastings, just beneath the university, above the pipeline, beneath our feet, territory, beneath map, the barricades, still an imagined possibility in the path of imagined new pipelines, a radium wolf in the mind, and raccoons carrying red flags. We sang, we homed, a long line making a circle to begin.
There's the radioactive wolf coming into it.
I know.
No pun intended, but he's a running character.
He's a running thing here, too, yeah. I know. Which, I mean, it literally says in one poem how, oh, I watched this video about the pipeline, and literally the next video it suggested I watch was this video about radioactive wolves of Chernobyl. And how could you not click on and watch a video that was called Radioactive Wolves of Chernobyl?
You got a potential hockey team name.
You do, don't you? Well, I wonder if that's what the team is named there. That's a good question.
A prophecy? Is that our future?
Well, you know, if it is, it's a very interesting one. So you watch that film, and I've read other things too about what's going on in the exclusion zone around Chernobyl 30 years after it. And wildlife is flourishing like crazy. There's wolves, there's herds of bison, there's beavers.
Three-eyed fish.
Three-eyed fish, probably too, though. But so they're flourishing. Are they dying of cancer? Some of them, for sure. There's a higher incidence of cancer. They check those animals. They've got radioactivity in their bodies, for sure. And some of them are getting cancers and dying. But, you know, whatever the percentage in your normal population for getting cancer would be, you up it by a few percent. Most human beings are going, well, that's dangerous. Let's not go there and do that. But, you know, beavers and wolves are not going to go, oh, damn, I've got a 5% chance more of getting cancer.
They're not checking their Facebook feed.
No, they're not. They're not. So they're actually flourishing. They're actually having a whale of a time there. So that's fascinating.
Because there's no human predators.
No humans in their ways. So the beavers come back and dam up all the waterways that human beings had controlled for farming, for agriculture purposes. Beavers take over and flood everything again. The beavers proliferate. That brings the wolves in because they like beaver. So they hunt the beavers. And on and on it goes. So, you know, partially why I've always believed, I think it's Duncan or someone that probably said this the first in a meaningful way that I picked up on it was, you know, follow the mistakes. They're meaningful. Follow the accidents. So hitting that radioactive wolves was an accident. But then I started thinking, you know what? Living right now under the threat of climate change is a lot like, you know, when you and I are growing up and the threat of the bomb. And as a kid, I thought a lot about the bomb. And, you know, you watched movies like Dr. Strangelove that comes up in here too. And I thought, okay, so these are all parts of what we've been doing to this planet for a long time, whether we're dosing it with radiation or whether we're changing its climate through the building of fossil fuels. They're all part and parcel of what we've done. And they're markers of how we experience the fear of what we've done to the world around us. So it seemed to make sense, so I tried to weave it in.